got me there. She's coming back now. Over and out. Katz put the fresh drinks down and sat next to him, this time closer than before. Mars said, "You ever think about coming to the D.C. area? Maybe you and me can do some business together."
"Now that would be wonderful,"
she said, flashing him a smile. "You can use your original partners, too. I'm not looking to cut anybody out. If you want me to meet with them, you know, vet me and all. I'm cool with that."
"Yeah, let me think about that."
She cradled her drink.
"You know, Decker keeps coming back to ask me questions. I think he might believe I had something to do with all this, and I didn't. I swear."
"Don't worry about that. He's just dotting his I's and crossing his T's."
"Does he suspect anybody yet?"
"Well, he thought Susan Richards might be good for the Hawkins murder, but now, I don't know."
"He doesn't confide in you?"
"Not everything. You know, Holmes kept stuff back from Watson, too," he added with a grin. She didn't return the look.
"It was awful losing my husband like that."
Mars touched her arm, and his features grew solemn. "Hey, sure it was. Nobody should have to go through that. Nobody." She squeezed his arm.
"Thanks."
Mars looked around. "So you got this place, and you got the American Grill. Decker told me about the place. Now that's some broad bandwidth," he chuckled. She smiled.
"It was David's first project. I've kept the place to, I don't know, honor his memory, I guess. It's not like the restaurant makes a lot of money. In fact, based on tonight, I'll probably make more in 1 month here than that place does in 6 months."
Mars held up his cocktail. "Just start selling some of these $15 highballs at the American Grill, and you'll see your profit margins soar."
"I'm not sure how big that would go over with the grill's clientele. They're more into pitchers of beer for $5.
"Not to change the subject, but did your husband have any business associates?" She crossed her arms and her cheery disposition faded.
"Why?"
"I'm back to playing Watson, see?"
"I guess I see. To answer your question, no, he was a solo operation. He got his financing from traditional sources."
"Like the local bank, Don Richards?"
"That's right."
"Anybody else in his past who might have had something against him?"
"Why are you asking these questions? Merrill Hawkins killed him."
"But if he didn't?"
"Why, because he said he was innocent?"
she said skeptically.
"His prints and DNA were found at the crime scene."
"You can fabricate that stuff." Katz looked taken aback by this.
"I didn't know that. Is that what Decker thinks?"
"Maybe. So did your husband have enemies?"
"No, nobody I could think of. He was a nice guy,"
she added quietly.
"He treated people well. He treated me well. He wasn't the type to screw people over and make them hate him or hold a grudge."
"So maybe they were targeting Don Richards."
"They?"
"In the event Hawkins is not the guy, there's a murderer out there."
"Do you have evidence that the fingerprints and such were fabricated?"
"This is where I pull out my official handbook and tell you that it's an ongoing police investigation."
"But you said you weren't with the FBI."
"Doesn't matter. Still can't divulge anything. But you're smart enough to read between the lines, right?" She nervously drank her cocktail and didn't answer right away.
"If Hawkins didn't do it, the real killer might still be out there. Any idea who he is?"
"He or she?" She gave him a withering look.
"I have an alibi for when it happened."
"Not my meaning. Lots of other she's out there."
"Wait a minute. What about Mitzi? What was her last name?"
"Mitzi Gardner."
"Did she have alibis for the murders?"
"Not sure."
"Well, don't you think you should check that?"
"I'm sure Decker is all over that."
"I remember from some of the testimony at the trial that she was an addict back then."
"I think she had problems in that area, yeah."
"So maybe she needed money for drugs and tried to rob them.
And Susan Richards?
Seems obvious. She killed herself because she killed Merrill Hawkins.
He looked at her doubtfully.
You don't think so?
She said. From how Deckard described her to me, Mitzi was a skinny drug addict mostly stoned out of her mind. No way she killed four people, including two grown men. Besides, her DNA and prints weren't found at the scene.
But you said that could be fabricated.
It's easier to add stuff to a crime scene than it is to take stuff away, especially prints and DNA. Taking stuff away, you miss one little thing, you're screwed. Trust me, I speak from experience.
So where does that leave us?
Investigating a series of murders.
Do you think you'll find out who did it, after all this time?
I bet once against Amos Decker, and I lost that bet.
Bad for you, then.
No, actually, he saved my life.
Seriously?
As serious as it gets, he rose. Thanks for showing me the place. You got a real winner here.
Wait. Do you have time for a nightcap? We could go back to my place.
Thanks, but it's been a long day. Take a rain check?
Sure. Okay.
Katz said, the disappointment clear on her features.
And it was great meeting you.
Same here. You gave me a lot to think about, and maybe I did the same for you. Her expression changed, becoming somber and detached. She recovered from this a moment later, stood, and held out her hand with a forced smile.
Until next time, Melvin?
They shook hands, and Mars said, "Look forward to it, Rachel." He left her there, gazing at all the partiers, but perhaps not really seeing a single one. Chapter 42. So what do you think? Asked Mars. He and Decker were driving together back to the Residence Inn. I think you'd make a great interrogator. I didn't want Katz to think I was drilling down on her. That's not what I meant. The really good questioners don't seem like they're prying at all. That's what you did. You did a good job of gaining her confidence and not trying too hard. Mars fist bumped Decker. Thanks. So what else? You think she's in on whatever this is?
She's hiding something. I just don't know what. And so is Mitzi Gardner. And maybe so was Susan Richards, for that matter.
A lot of people hiding shit in this town.
Nothing new there, grumbled Decker. Happens in every town.
Mars checked his watch. It's midnight. How about some sleep? We're not as young as we used to be, you know.
Sure,
said Decker, although sleep was the last thing on his mind. After Mars went to his room at the Residence Inn, Decker came back down to the parking lot, climbed into his car, and set off. He drove out of the downtown area, and his mind on autopilot, made his way to the neighborhood and house that he had called home for over a decade. He pulled to the curb, rolled down the driver's side window, and cut his engine and lights. He looked out the window at his old house, which was dark, the only illumination a single streetlight and the moon. He had no real understanding of why he was here. It was punishing to see the place. Memories flooded back to him as easily as drawing breath. He closed his eyes as the images suddenly careened out of control, just like last time. They were coming at him like flocks of hurtling birds or fired bullets. He couldn't make them stop. He felt his heart flutter, his gut lurch. The sweat started to pool on his forehead. His skin grew clammy, and his armpits were suddenly soaked with sweat, the sudden stink assailing his nostrils. His heart was now racing, and he thought he might be having a coronary. But slowly, ever so slowly, as he gripped the steering wheel as though that might allow some semblance of control over what was happening to him, things settled down in his mind. He finally lay back against his seat, exhausted without having moved at all. He hung his head out the window and sucked in the crisp air as the moisture evaporated off his skin.
This is getting old, and so am I.
He waggled his head, spit some stomach bile out the window, and kept taking deep breaths. He remembered when he'd come out of the coma at the hospital after getting crunched on the football field on opening day. A bunch of people he didn't know were hovering over him, asking him questions. He had IV and monitoring lines running all over him.
He felt like Gulliver, just awoken as a prisoner of the Lilliputians. He had come to learn that he had died on the field, twice, only to be resuscitated each time by the team trainer. He'd been hit so hard his helmet had flown off and was lying in the grass, far away from his body. The crowd had been cheering the blindside hit until they realized he was not getting up. When the trainer started pounding on his chest, the crowd of 70,000 people quieted. The network had cut away to another game. It was not good for the NFL brand to show dead football players lying on the turf. He learned he'd suffered a traumatic brain injury. Later, he discovered his brain had rewired itself around the damaged areas, accessing domains that had never been triggered before. This had left him with the twin conditions of hyperthymesia and synesthesia. But he didn't know he had them until later. It wasn't like an X-ray could reveal this. The first time he had seen a color burst into his head, associated with something as incongruous as a number, Decker had seriously thought he was going insane. Then, when he was able to recall things he never had been able to before, the doctors had started testing his cognitive abilities. He had looked at sheets of numbers and words and was able to regurgitate them all, because he could see them in his head, just as they had lain on the page. Then off he had gone to a special cognitive institute in Chicago that dealt exclusively with people like him. Decker didn't know what was more amazing, his newfound abilities or the realization that he was far from the only one who possessed them. Now he snatched one more glimpse at his old home, briefly imagining that it was 5 years ago and Molly and Cassie were still alive, waiting for him to come home from being a cop. He would play with Molly, kiss Cassie, and be a family. He held on to that image for another few seconds and then let it go. A phantom that had to be released into the ether where it would simply vanish, because it was no longer real. You can live in the past, or you can live in the present, but you really can't live in both, Amos. He started the car, rolled the window back up, put his rental in gear, and drove off. He was a loner, had always been a loner after he died on the field. Cassie, though, had been the one to make sure he did not shrivel up inside his cocoon and keep everyone away. After she died, there had been no one to do that. Then Alex Jameson had come into his life and somewhat filled Cassie's role. Decker didn't know where his thirst for justice, for right over wrong, had come from. He did know that he had possessed it long before his family was taken from him. Maybe because that hit on the field stole me from me. And I've been looking for something to fill that hole all these years. And catching killers seems to be the only thing that cuts it. Because they steal the most precious thing of all. Somebody's life. He had no idea if that was the whole story or not. He just knew that right now, that's all he had to hold on to. As he drove, he focused on the problem at hand. What he desperately wanted to know was if David Katz had arranged to meet with Don Richards, and that had been communicated by a phone call that had involved only the two men, how had their killers known the men were going to be meeting that night? He couldn't believe that Susan Richards had been party to it, because that would necessitate Decker's believing that she would sacrifice both her kids as well. Decker had seen the woman that night. As Lancaster had said, Susan had been hysterical. Utterly out of her mind with disbelief and rage, she was a woman who had been truly shocked to learn that she had gone out for the evening and come home to find out she had no family left. Decker slowed the car down as he thought back over all these points. He settled on the phone call between Katz and Richards. There was actually no way to know that it was Katz who had called Richards. It was just Katz's phone. Anyone could have made that call. And there was no guarantee that it was Richards who had answered, for the same reason. The possibility was obvious. There could have been no scheduled meeting between the men. Decker had just assumed there was. The killer could have orchestrated all that to make it look like there was a meeting, or just Katz coming over for a beer. The fact that Decker believed that the killer or killers had driven an unconscious Katz over there made sense under that scenario. They could have gone in, held the Richardses hostage, brought in Katz, methodically killed them, laid their evidence casting guilt on Merrill Hawkins,
departed the house through the back, and an hour later called in a disturbance. So now the question was, who was really meant to be killed, Richards or Katz, the banker or the borrower? And why? And why did their killers pick that night to do it? Decker knew if he could find an answer to any or all of those three questions, he might be able to blow this sucker wide open. But he wasn't there yet. Maybe not even close. He drove to a very familiar place, Burlington High School, where a little over 2 years before, a horrific mass shooting had stunned the town. Decker parked his car and made his way to the dilapidated football field. Burlington no longer fielded a football team. They didn't even have enough guys interested in playing the game. He climbed up into the bleachers as a light drizzle began to fall. He took a seat and stared down at the field where he had been a superstar many years before. The only player in Burlington High history to go on to play in the NFL, if only for one play. He wrapped himself in his coat and stared moodily out. As his gaze drifted to the right, he flinched as he saw her coming toward him. Mary Lancaster slowly made her way up the metal steps and sat down next to him.
"Didn't we do this before?"
she said. He nodded. "In the rain, after the school shootings. How'd you know I was here?"
"I didn't. You know my house backs up to the school. I take walks late at night. I saw you."
He nodded again. "But it's after 1 in the morning. It's not really safe for you to be out alone."
"And it is for you?"
"Well," he said, "I'm a lot bigger than you." She opened her coat and he saw her pistol riding in its holster.
"Someone wants to try to mug me, they'll be eating around."
"I can see that. So how's it going?"
"It's going. I hear you're making progress on the case."
"From who do you hear that?"
"Of all people, Natty. He seems to have had a change of heart about you after Sally was killed."
Decker said, "Did you know they were seeing each other?" Lancaster looked stunned.
"What? No, I didn't. Natty's married."
"Sally had ended it with him. She knew it wasn't right." Lancaster shook her head.
"I never saw that coming, and I still can't believe she's dead."
He glanced at her as the rain picked up. She had on a long trench coat and a ball cap. Her gray hair flowed out from underneath it. She looked to Decker like she was carrying an enormous weight on her slender shoulders.
"Are you ill, Mary? I mean really ill?"
She didn't look at him, but kept her gaze on the field.
"Why do you ask that?"
"Because you're not the same. You've changed. And I don't think it's just because of what's happening with you and Earl."
She clenched her hands and then flexed them straight.
"I'm not terminal, if that's what you want to know. I don't have cancer, despite my smoking."
"What then?"
She didn't answer right away. When Lancaster did respond, her voice held a resigned tone.
"Ever heard of early-onset dementia?"
Decker gaped.
"Dementia? You're still young, same age as me."
She gave him a sad smile.
"That's why they call it early, Amos."
"Are they sure? When were you diagnosed?"
"About 6 months ago. And they are sure. Brain scans, more MRIs than I can remember, blood work, biopsies, everything. I'm on meds, treatment."
"Then they can turn it around," he said, with a small measure of relief in his voice.
She shook her head.
"No, there is no cure. It's just holding the progression back as long as possible."
"What's the prognosis then?" he said quietly.
"Hard to say. It's not like there are a million cases like me. And everyone's reaction is apparently different."
"Can they give you an estimate?"
She drew a long breath and her face quivered with emotion.
"In a year, I might not be able to recognize myself or anyone else. Or it could be 5 years. But not much beyond that. I won't even be 50.
A long moment of silence passed,
as tears slid down her cheeks. "I'm so sorry, Mary." She wiped her eyes and waved this off.
"I don't need sympathy, Decker, least of all from you. I know it's not your thing."
She patted his shoulder and added in a kinder tone,
"But I appreciate the effort."
"How did you know something was wrong?"
"When I woke up one morning and couldn't remember Sandy's name for about a minute. I blew that off, chalked it up to overwork, but little things like that started to happen with more frequency. That's when I went to the doctor."
Decker sat back and thought about his momentary inability to remember Cassie's favorite color. "Is that the reason for you and Earl splitting up?"
"Earl is a good guy. Couldn't ask for a better one. But he has enough to do taking care of Sandy. I do not need to add to his burden."
"A good guy would not see it as a burden." She looked at him.
"Cassie never saw you as a burden. I hope you know that."
Decker looked away, his gaze drifting over the field where he had run like the wind, opposing players bouncing off him like pebbles flung against a mighty oak, people cheering him on, a normal kid with abnormal, even freakish athletic talent. Those had been some of the happiest times of his life, only to be dwarfed on the happiness scale by his time as a husband and father. "I know that," he said quietly, "but I don't think you should give up on Earl that easily. The words are, in sickness and in health."
"Till death do us part. Those vows are easy to make when you're young, healthy, and happy, and in love your whole life ahead of you."
"Are you still in love with Earl?" She looked at him, startled.
"What?"
"I'm still in love with Cassie. I'll always love her. I don't care if she's dead. But Earl isn't dead. Earl is right here. I would give anything for Cassie to be here. And nothing, not early onset dementia or anything else, would keep me from her. Any second without her would be a waste of my life." Decker rose and walked down the steps as the rain picked up. Mary Lancaster watched him every step of the way. Chapter 43. "You look tired. Didn't you sleep okay?" Mars asked this as he and Decker sat in the dining area of the Residence Inn the next morning having coffee. "Slept like a baby," lied Decker. He sat back and fiddled with his paper napkin. "Planning went into this. They had to get the print, the DNA, and come up with the light plate switch. They had to kidnap David Katz. They had to commit the murders, leave the evidence, and flee the crime scene. This was clearly premeditated."
"I agree."
"So why did they pick that night, then, to do it? Was it just a coincidence that it was around the time of the only known phone call between the two men for a long while?"
"Maybe they found out about the phone call another way. What time did it happen?"
12:10 p.m.
"And Richards got the call at work?"
"It was his cell phone, but because of the time, presumably it was."
Decker sat up straighter, his eyes wide. "What?" said Mars, looking a bit alarmed.
"It was on a Monday in October."
"Okay."
"It was actually also Columbus Day."
"A holiday, then?"
"Yes, and that meant two things. There was no school, and the bank was closed."
"So where was Richards when he got the call, if not at the bank?"
"He could very well have been at home," said Decker.
"With his kids and his wife. Do you think one of them might have overheard something and then told someone?"
"That's certainly possible. But regardless, they would have had to act fast, get the print on the switchplate and take it with them to the Richardses. Then someone scratches Hawkins' arms and collects his DNA that way."
"And you think it was his daughter, Mitzi?"
"It would explain why he kept quiet. He would obviously know who scratched him."
Mars said thoughtfully, "I see what you mean. His wife was dying, and he didn't want their daughter to get in trouble, even if it cost him his freedom."
Decker nodded. "When they finish testing the DNA sample, I bet it will show that Mitzi's DNA is also mixed up in what we found under Abigail's nails."
Mars said, "But why would she frame her own father?"
"She was a drug addict, out of her mind half the time, She could have been easily persuaded to do it. But what would be the motive of somebody doing all that to kill Katz and Richards? And how does that tie into David Katz going over to Don Richards' house? Wait, do you think those guys were into drugs too? Not that we know. Decker stopped. But Richards' son, Frankie, was. And we found out he was also dealing. But again, what's the connection? Decker closed his eyes and dialed up his cloud. After a few seconds, he shook his head. It's not in the case file. What's not? The name of Mitzi's drug dealer. Chapter 44. Natty was sitting sulkily behind his desk in the open room of the homicide department. Four other detectives were there working away, including Mary Lancaster. A moment later, Decker and Mars burst into the space. Decker glanced at Lancaster, who had a questioning look on her face, before marching over to stand in front of Natty.
Carl Stevens, he said.
Who?
He was the dealer who'd sold some stuff to Frankie Richards.
Lancaster had risen from her chair and approached.
We know that, but he had an alibi for the time of the murders. We checked that back then.
Not the point, said Decker brusquely. So what is the point? Snapped Natty.
Did he also deal to Mitzi Hawkins?
Lancaster and Natty exchanged a look. Natty said, I don't know. It's been a long time. Does it matter?
It could.
Natty sighed. I can check. No guarantees that it's in the records anywhere, and Carl Stevens sold to a lot of people. Mars said, Where is he now? Lancaster answered,
I can tell you that. He's at Travis Correctional Center. It's a private prison now. Stevens is serving 10 to 20 on a second-degree murder conviction. He killed a guy over a heroin transaction. He's 5 years into his term. I was the one who busted him.
Decker said,
Travis Correctional? Isn't that where Merrill Hawkins ended up serving his time?
Natty got on his computer and tapped some more keys. When he reached the page, his jaw fell. He looked up.
You're right.
Were they both in Gen Pop?
Asked Decker, referring to the prison's general population.
I don't know, but that's usually the case. They don't have the space to segregate prisoners. They're way beyond capacity as it is.
Lancaster said,
They could have interacted at the prison, then.
She looked at Decker.
What are you thinking?
If they did interact, Stevens could have told him something that led Hawkins to come back here, asking us to prove his innocence. I wondered about the timing of all this. I mean, did Hawkins just learn something that made him believe we could prove his innocence? He wanted to meet with me. Maybe it was then that he was going to tell me what he knew.
Lancaster said,
He must have learned it recently, otherwise why wouldn't he have raised it while he was still in prison?
What could Stevens have told him? Asked Natty.
For one thing, that he was Mitzi's dealer, replied Decker.
So what?
That could mean a connection between Frankie Richards and Mitzi.
What kind of connection? Persisted Natty. You're not making sense.
Can you get his permission to visit Stevens? Asked Decker, ignoring the question. Today?
I can try, but what could he possibly tell you?
I won't know that until I ask him.
He paused.
You want to come along, Natty?
The man didn't answer right away. He glanced at Lancaster and then said in a low voice, I'm actually taking my wife out to lunch today. Decker gazed at him for a few moments.
I think that's a better use of your time. I'll fill you in when we get back.
He pointed at the phone on Natty's desk.
Make the call and tell them it'll be two of us.
Make that three,
said Lancaster.
Mary, you're recused from...
Screw recusal, Amos. This doesn't have to do with Merrill Hawkins' murder where Earl is providing an alibi.
Decker glanced at Natty, who shrugged.
I have no problem with that.
Lancaster said,
Let's go.
She walked out of the room without another word. Hey, Decker, said Mars, grinning. She just did a really good impression of you. It was a 2-hour drive, and Mars dozed in the back seat. Decker had introduced Mars to Lancaster as they headed out.
Lancaster checked the back seat and then glanced at Decker.
At the football field?
She said quietly. Decker kept his eyes on the road.
Yeah.
What you said made a lot of sense.
Decker just kept staring at the road and the approaching storm.
I talked to Earl this morning.
Now Decker glanced at her, his expression prompting.
I think we're going to give it another shot.
And his lady friend? Asked Decker.
I don't think it would be an untruth to say that I pushed him into that relationship. Don't get me wrong, Nancy's nice, and Earl likes her. Hell, I like her.
But it's not what Earl wants?
No. He made that clear this morning. What he wants
is you.
Lancaster touched her wrinkled face and ran a hand down her stringy hair.
Can't really understand why. I look like shit. Nancy, on the other hand, is a real babe.
Who's being shallow now?
Lancaster looked embarrassed and dropped her hands in her lap.
I have to say, I was surprised that you thought enough about my situation to tell me what I needed to hear.
Meaning that I only look inward?
Meaning that I know those situations are very difficult for you with your special...
Maybe I'm growing out of it, interrupted Decker.
Lancaster absently touched her temple.
What did it feel like? When your brain changed?
He glanced over to see Lancaster staring at him with such intensity that he instantly felt anxious in trying to answer her query. He could sense that she was counting on him to tell her it would be somehow okay, or at least not terrible.
I didn't have much time to make the transition, Mary. I woke up in a hospital and I was different. My mind was doing things it had never done before.
I guess you were scared.
He glanced at her again to see the woman now staring at her hands.
I won't lie to you, Mary. It was unsettling. But I got professional help, and I was able to adapt. I won't tell you that it gets any easier. I will tell you that I was able to manage it, to live my life.
It will be a bit different for me, I imagine.
There's no cure for what you and I have, though they are very different things. But every day they make progress. In 5 years, who's to say they won't have beat what you have?
She nodded, but her look of anxiety remained.
If I live that long?
Decker reached over and gripped her shoulder. She looked startled by this personal touch. It was not something that Amos Decker normally would ever do. She knew he didn't like being touched by others.
You have Earl and Sandy and me to help you through this, Mary.
You don't live here anymore.
I'm here right now, and you know I'm going to keep coming back to Burlington.
Because of your family?
And now, also because of you.
This declaration caught Lancaster off guard. A small sob escaped from her lips, and she suddenly seized his hand with both of hers and squeezed, as the tears, like released water over a dam, broke free and slid down her cheeks.
You're a good friend, Amos. Sometimes I have trouble remembering that.
You put up with me for a lot of years, Mary. Longer than anyone else than Cassie. You probably deserve a medal for that, but all I can offer you is my friendship.
I'll take that over any medal.
They drove the rest of the way in silence. Chapter 45. With its concrete walls, concertina wire, attack dogs, and guards with sniper rifles on towers, Travis Correctional Center rose out of the Ohio soil, looking every bit the max prison that it was. Decker drove up to the entrance and they cleared security, right as the heavens opened up and the rain poured down, forcing them to sprint for cover. Natty had secured an interview with Carl Stevens, and they were escorted to the visitor's room. All three, Decker, Lancaster, and Mars, were well acquainted with prisons, for starkly different reasons. Catcalls, screams, the smells of over 2,000 men kept in close proximity to each other in a facility designed for half that number, together with the commingled aromas of dozens of types of illicit contraband.
They sat at a table and awaited the arrival of Carl Stevens. He was brought in a few minutes later. Decker remembered him as tall and thin, with long, dirty hair tied back in a ponytail and a scruffy beard. The man appearing before them in his orange prison jumpsuit and shackles was thickened with dumbbell-driven muscle. His head was shaved, his facial hair gone. His knotted forearms were bedecked with tats that continued on his neck and up the back of his bald head. He smiled at the trio as he was seated in front of them, and his shackles locked into an eye bolt on the floor. The guards stepped away, but kept a watchful eye from across the room. Stevens looked at Decker.
I remember you. Decker, right?
Decker nodded. Then the inmate turned to Lancaster.
Sure as hell remember you. You're the reason I'm here.
No, let's keep to the facts, Carl. The reason you're here is because you killed the guy.
Details, details, said Stevens with a smirk.
He glanced at Mars, and his expression soured.
Don't know you.
No, you don't, said Mars.
You a cop, too?
He's helping us on a case, said Decker. Stevens kept his gaze on Mars.
You got the look of somebody who's done time.
You ever been locked up in Texas? Said Mars.
No, why?
I wouldn't recommend it.
Stevens looked at Decker.
What do you want? I was gonna work out, and then I got the word you wanted to see me.
Decker said dryly, Sorry to interrupt your exercise. We wanted to know if you were Mitzi Hawkins' dealer.
Who's Mitzi Hawkins?
Merrill Hawkins' daughter.
Stevens shrugged.
That doesn't mean shit to me. I dealt to a lot of people.
He laughed. I didn't ask for fucking ID.
Decker described Mitzi to him. Stevens chuckled.
You gotta be shitting me. You just described every whacked out bitch I ever sold to.
How about Frankie Richards? You remember him? He was only 14. He died at his home along with his father and sister and a man named David Katz. They were murdered.
Nah, I can't say that I do. Anything else?
Decker was looking at the tats on the man's forearms, words and symbols. When Stevens noticed this, he lowered his arms to below the tabletop, his shackles rattling as he did so.
Which gangs do you belong to in here, Carl? Asked Decker.
Stevens grinned.
Hell, I'm Switzerland, man. Neutral. Most guys in here are Hispanic. Well, they got his skin color.
He pointed at Mars.
They belong to the gangs, not the white guys. We're in the minority.
You're not the only white guy in here,
pointed out Lancaster.
Not by a long shot.
Well, most days it seems like I'm in the minority. We got to do something about that, he grinned. Take back our country.
How? Lock up more white guys,
said Mars. Stephen's lips curled back.
No, just keep your kind out.
I was born here.
Ways around that, said Stevens with another smirk. We done here?
Lancaster said,
If you're straight with us, Carl, we might be able to help you out.
He glanced up at her, all attention now.
Help me out how?
Your sentence. It has some flexibility.
I've done 5 on a 10 to 20. What can you do about that?
That depends on what you can do for us.
He rolled his eyes.
It's always the same old shit with you people. I gotta tell what I know, if anything, and then you tell me the deal, take it or leave it. What other businesses negotiate that way?
Decker said, This isn't a business. This is you marking fewer years in here than you otherwise would.
Stevens said,
I can lie and tell you anything you want. Then you cut me a sweetheart deal. How about that?
Lies don't cut it. We need the truth, corroborated.
It happened a long time ago. How do you expect me to remember anything?
As soon as Stevens said this, his features tightened. Decker said,
What happened a long time ago?
When Stevens didn't answer, he added, I thought you didn't remember anything about Frankie Richards or Merrill Hawkins.
Just making conversation, said Stevens uncomfortably, his swagger now gone.
Lancaster interjected.
You want a deal or not? We can leave right now, but we'll be sure to note in the record how uncooperative you were. That way, you go to the max 20.
Stevens lunged forward and might have leapt across the table but for his restraints. The look on his face was that of a snarling wild animal.
You screw me like that, bitch, and you're going to regret it. I didn't ask for you to come here.
Is that right, Carl?
Said Lancaster.
You got friends on the outside?
I got friends all over.
So where were your friends when your ass ended up in here?
She paused.
Some friends. Why do you think you owe them?
Who said anything about owing anybody? He barked.
The guards made a move to step forward, but Decker waved them off. He said,
Because guys like you are a dime a dozen, and Mary and I have seen it all 100 times. You got stupid, and you got caught, and your friends ran away from you as fast as they could. The result? You're in here, and they're not. You got no idea who you're dealing with.
Then tell us, replied Decker. I always like to know who's on the opposing team. Stevens waved this off with a rattle of his shackles.
I'm just spouting, man. Just bullshit. Getting back to Richards and Hawkins, you dealt for them both, I'm betting. Maybe you heard something from one of them that might tie into what happened.
Lancaster added,
And maybe you saw Merrill Hawkins here and you two talked about stuff, and then he got released.
That was bullshit. I'm sick, too. I got a liver thing.
So, you knew he was released because of his cancer being terminal, said Decker. When the inmate once more looked chagrined at his own words, Decker said,
That's the second time you've screwed up talking with us, Carl. I think you need to tell us what you know, and we'll work a deal for you. You'll be out of here sooner than you otherwise would. You think it's that easy?
I don't know. Why don't you try us?
I gotta think about it.
Lancaster said,
What's to think about? You help us, we help you.
Stevens shook his head.
Tell us this. Did you talk to Hawkins? Asked Decker.
I might have seen him around.
And might you have discussed the murders with him?
Why don't you ask him? Lancaster said,
We would, but somebody killed him.
Stevens turned pale and looked like he might be sick.
I gotta go. He looked at the guards. Hey, I'm done here.
Decker said, It doesn't have to be this way, Carl.
Yeah, it does. Now leave me the hell alone.
As he was being led away, Lancaster said to Decker,
I screwed up. I shouldn't have told him what happened to Hawkins.
I don't think it would have mattered, Mary, but we did get one lead.
What?
The tats on Stevens' arms were very close to the tats I saw on the shooter who killed Sally Brimmer.
What? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
When they got back to Burlington, Natty met them in the detective's room. What the hell happened up there?
What do you mean?
Asked Lancaster.
They just found Carl Stevens with a shiv in his neck. He's dead.
Chapter 46. Decker, Lancaster, and Mars were holding a powwow in the empty dining area of the Residence Inn as the rain beat down outside in the darkness.
Well, that tells us your theory was right, Amos,
said Lancaster.
Stevens was involved in this somehow.
And by talking to us, he got the death penalty, added Mars bitterly. I know the guy was scum, but nobody deserves that crap.
Decker sat there, his hands in his lap, his gaze centered on a spot on the ceiling.
The shooter who killed Sally Brimmer had the same tats. There's apparently a connection between him and Stevens.
Are you really sure they're the same?
Asked Lancaster.
I got a clear look at them in the alley, and at Stevens' back at the prison. I think Stevens knew that,
because when he caught me looking, he put his arms under the table so I couldn't see the tats anymore.
Membership in the same gang,
said Lancaster.
That's certainly possible.
They moved quickly, said Decker. He was dead within 2 hours of our meeting him.
How could they possibly have acted that quickly?
Asked Lancaster.
Unless it was unrelated to our visit, inmates do kill other inmates all the time.
That would have to be the biggest coincidence in the world. And you don't believe in even small coincidences, said Mars. And you saw how Stevens clammed up when he found out Merrill Hawkins had been murdered. He was afraid for his safety. He tried to shut it down, but it was too late.
With him gone, how do we get to the truth?
Asked Lancaster.
Our leads keep dying in hell. We don't even know how whoever killed the Richards family and David Katz got there or left.
No, I think we do know that, said Decker. He explained to her his theory on Katz being kidnapped and driven to the Richards' home in his car. And also about the light switch plate changeout and the DNA possibly coming from Mitzi. I told Natty about it all, too.
So that's why you wanted to talk to Stevens,
said Lancaster. Decker nodded. I think Frankie Richards overheard the conversation between his father and Katz and told Stevens about it when he saw him, or maybe he phoned him. The call came in on a holiday, and both father and son were presumably home. Whatever Frankie told Stevens about that phone call, Stevens then told others, and they arranged things, and the very next night, they came and killed them all. That's how they picked that night and also the location, since Richards was probably expecting Katz to come over anyway. That seems to be what the phone call between the two was about.
Mars said, and maybe they picked that night because they knew Susan Richards wouldn't be home. It might be that she knew nothing about what they were planning to discuss.
Lancaster said,
so we figure out what they were planning to discuss, this whole thing unravels.
They only had one known connection, the American Grill restaurant.
Which Rachel Katz still owns and operates, said Mars. And that's puzzling, since she told me she'll probably make more in a month at her nightclub than the American Grill does in 6 months.
And she's got all these other projects going, so it's a wonder she wants to keep the place, said Decker.
Mars said, she told me it was because it was her husband's first deal, but the lady didn't strike me as being all that nostalgic.
And she also told you she brings the local know-how, and her partners bring the cash, noted Decker.
You think her money partners are involved in all this?
Asked Lancaster. I don't know, but if they are, they would have had to have been around 13 years ago. It might be worthwhile digging into who they are.
Whoever it is, they must have some serious connections inside Travis Correctional,
commented Lancaster. How do you want to go about doing this with Rachel? Asked Decker. They already know we're snooping around from our meeting with Stevens. I don't want to spook them even more.
Mars said, what about me?
What about you what?
Asked Lancaster.
Lady clearly likes me.
The lady also knows you work with us, said Decker.
She told me a lot last night. Maybe she'll tell me some more.
I don't like it,
said Lancaster. I don't like it either, said Decker. But it might be our best shot. And at the same time, we can find out who her partners are. There has to be paperwork filed with all of her projects.
Okay, I'll get rolling on that,
said Lancaster. She pointed her finger at Mars.
This is not fun and games. These people are killers.
Yeah, said Mars, which is why we're going after them.
You think you know a lot about killers?
Well, I was on death row all those years.
Lancaster looked at Decker.
Will you tell him to be serious?
He is being serious, Mary.
Lancaster whirled back around to stare suspiciously at Mars. Don't worry, he said. Turns out I was innocent. Only cost me 20 years of my life and ruined any shot I had at playing in the NFL.
Damn,
said Lancaster.
That sucks.
Oh, it more than sucks, trust me.
How are you going to approach it with Katz? Asked Decker.
Look, she probably thinks she can work on me and get details about the investigation. She tried doing that last night. I didn't give her much, but I did give her a taste here and there. I can let her think she's making inroads, and I'll do the same with her. He paused. And there's something off with her.
What do you mean?
Asked Lancaster. I'm not sure. She's attractive. She's got money, education.
But she feels like a loner to me. And how come she never remarried? And why is she always so guarded about everything?
When I asked about meeting her business partners, she didn't look comfortable with that at all.
You could be right,
remarked Lancaster. And if we end up in a place where I can snoop around, I will.
Whoa, now you think you're some kind of what, spy?
Said Lancaster. Well, my girlfriend is a spy.
Now you're bullshitting me, right?
Mars held up his right hand. God's honest truth. She looked at Decker, who nodded.
Military intelligence.
Son of a bitch.
Exclaimed Lancaster.
You have a whole new class of friends, Amos.
Hey, if you don't grow, you wither, right? Said Mars. Decker put a hand on his shoulder.
All that aside, this is dangerous, Melvin. You're not going into this clean. They know what side you're on. Things can go sideways fast. If you sense any of that happening, you need to get out. Pronto.
I've always been fast, Decker. You know that from our college football days. Lancaster said.
Wait a minute, you two played football against each other?
Longhorn versus Buckeye, said Mars. And guess who won?
You did, said Decker. And I hope you win again, because unlike our college football matchup, I'm rooting for you.
Mars smiled, but when he saw the look Decker was giving him, he gripped his shoulder and said, Look, I know this isn't a game, but people have been killed. For no reason other than some assholes decided they didn't get to live anymore, and that included kids. If I can help you take them down, then I will.
Lancaster exchanged a glance with Decker.
You have seriously upgraded your friends, Amos.
I know, he said, and I want to keep them.
Chapter 47.
What the hell is he doing here?
Decker, Mars, and Lancaster were walking into the police station the next morning when Childress stormed across the front lobby to confront them. Decker eyed the police superintendent, who was attempting to stare him down.
I'm observing, he replied. Like I was told I could. Natty's on board with it.
I don't give a damn if Natty's on board with it, Childress put a finger in Decker's face. And I know damn well that you're hardly just observing. You're working this case. I know you are, because I know you.
Then you know that I want to get to the truth.
In a scoffing tone, Childress said,
You think you can just waltz back in here and try to do our work for us? We're perfectly capable of investigating this case ourselves. We don't need you or the FBI to help us.
He glanced at Mars.
Are you FBI?
No, just your friendly neighborhood vigilante.
Nothing wrong with cooperation, interjected Decker. Happens all the time.
He glanced at Lancaster, but was not surprised to see her remain silent. This was her job. This was how she supported her family. And with her health issues, Childress could make her life miserable. Now, Childress got right in Decker's face.
Just remember that we are still pressing charges against you, and you still have a court date to keep. Hired that lawyer yet? Because you're going to need one. Well, I won't be hiring Ken Finger.
Childress drew back.
Why not? He's got a good reputation. Yeah, he did a bang-up job for Merrill Hawkins. Hell, the world's greatest lawyer couldn't have gotten Hawkins off. The forensic case was overwhelming. You think so? You built that damn case, Decker, snapped Childress. Only I built it wrong.
Childress was about to say something, but seemed to swallow his words.
What are you talking about? We were all had. That's what I'm talking about. You're nuts. Forensics don't lie. No, they don't, but people do, all the time. You're making no damn sense at all.
Childress glared at Lancaster.
How the hell can you work with this guy, Mary?
He gets results. You know that as well as I do.
Childress turned back to Decker.
One step out of line. One. Your ass is mine.
Well, that's quite tempting, replied Decker. Childress looked like he was about to throw a punch, but he somehow marshaled his anger and marched off.
Is he always that mellow? Asked Mars.
He's actually gotten better,
said Lancaster.
He went from Satan to just being an asshole.
You're really being prosecuted, Decker? Asked Mars. I thought it was just a joke.
For now I am. I doubt it will ever get to an actual trial.
Don't believe that if Childress has anything to do with it,
said Lancaster.
He'll keep, and we need to keep our focus on the case.
What's the next move?
Asked Lancaster.
Someone impersonated Susan Richards on the day she disappeared.
That's still not been proven,
pointed out Lancaster.
It's just speculation.
Fine, but speculation or not, we have to follow the theory up.
Mars said, Why don't you two run that down? I'm going to try to connect with Rachel. She left me her cell phone number.
We want to be around when you do, said Decker.
Okay, but you can't be hovering over me. I'll let you know what I set up.
We can wire you up again.
Mars shook his head. No, I don't want to chance her finding a wire on me. That'll blow everything.
Okay, said Decker reluctantly. But be careful.
Mars gave him a thumbs up as he left them. Lancaster watched him go.
Don't worry, Decker. He looks like he can take care of himself.
I'd worry less if he were going into a bar fight with five big guys. Melvin would win that battle for sure.
Then what are you worried about? He's not going into a fight with five guys. He's meeting up with one woman.
That's what I'm worried about.
So what are we going to do next?
Something you can't help me with.
Why not?
Like I said, it has to do with Susan Richards. And what I want to check also involves Rachel Katz. You can't work that part of the case because of Earl.
Earl was Rachel Katz's alibi for Merrill Hawkins' murder, not for what happened to Richards.
But do you think Childress will see it that way?
Who gives a shit?
In a bit of gallows humor, she added,
Next year I might not even remember who he is.
Okay, if you're sure.
I am. But how is Katz involved in Richards' disappearance and murder?
Someone impersonated Richards so Agatha Bates could ID her, and both Rachel Katz and Mitzi Gardner are the right height and build. From a distance, and with a long coat and hat on, they could be mistaken for Susan Richards, especially by someone whose eyesight isn't the best, like Bates.
You really think one of them killed Richards and took her place after sticking the woman in that suitcase?
Either we prove it is true, or we don't.
Who's first? Katz or Gardner?
We'll leave Katz for Melvin right now. Let's go talk to Gardner.
She's not obligated to tell us anything.
Then let's hear that from her.
Are you going to just point blank accuse the woman?
You've never appreciated the subtle side of my personality, Mary.
Lancaster looked surprised.
That may be because I've never seen it, Amos.
Well, hang on, because you're about to.
Chapter 48.
Okay, this is harassment, damn it.
Decker and Lancaster were standing on the front porch of Mitzi Gardner's home while the woman stared angrily across at them over the width of the doorway.
I can understand your feeling that way, Ms. Gardner, but the fact is, we're doing our best to solve multiple homicides connected to your father. And like it or not, you're one of the best resources we have. We just have some questions for you, and we'll make them as painless as possible. I promise.
Lancaster looked incredulously at Decker, having obviously never seen him talk this way to any suspect or person of interest. Gardner eyed Lancaster.
I remember you. You two worked the case together.
We did, yes, and I have to say I doubt I would have recognized you.
Lancaster ran her eye over Gardner's long, healthy frame, her elegant clothes, her perfectly coiffed hair, and her blemish-free complexion.
I know that I've changed quite a bit from when you last saw me.
You look great.
Thank you.
And I have to say, I never thought we'd end up revisiting this case. But then your father came back to town proclaiming his innocence.
Gardner pointed at Decker.
I already told him that was crap. My father just wanted to mess with you, make you doubt his guilt.
We still haven't found out who killed him, said Decker.
You said you were checking with the two widows?
Right. Well, one of them was murdered.
Gardner gaped, and Decker saw her fingers on the door tremble.
Murdered? Which one?
Susan Richards. We believe she was abducted from her home and then killed.
When Gardner didn't respond, Decker added,
Can we come in?
She led them down the hall to the conservatory. She motioned for them to sit while she stood there clasping and unclasping her hands.
You look pretty surprised, said Decker.
Of course I'm surprised. First my father and now Susan Richards.
She abruptly sat down across from them and stared at her lap. Lancaster looked around the graceful lines of the room.
You have a lovely home.
Gardner nodded absently, but still wouldn't meet their eyes. Decker took something from his pocket and held it out to her.
I thought you might want to have this.
Gardner looked up, but did not reach for the photo.
It's you, as a little girl. We found it in your dad's wallet. There wasn't much else in there. I know you said you never visited him in prison, but he evidently kept this photo all these years.
Gardner shook her head.
I don't want